real or imaginary?
Imaginary.
Six.
I'm going to tell you a little story today about a young man whose life was completely destroyed by fear. Under the blue moon I saw you.
So soon you'll take me.
Up in your arms. You want to tell Mom and Dad why you stopped taking your medication?
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. I've been reading the reviews for the show, the feedback, the reviews, the ratings. And I'm telling you right now, drop your review, rating, feedback. I am reading them again. I asked for ratings, reviews, and feedback, 2 years ago, and then I wouldn't let you go with that one. I talked about it for months, and then I dropped it for good. Well, like any rock legend coming back on tour, that wasn't the last concert. That wasn't the last one. Drop the reviews and ratings. You know what? I got some negative feedback on there, and I take it serious. If you have negative things to say, just leave a 5-star and you can still say it. You know what I'm saying? Don't be a dick. Because when you drop those 1-stars, that puts me down on the bottom of the algorithm, and then you get shill-ass fake BuzzFeed conspiracy theory podcast popping up ahead of your boy. You don't want that. I don't want that. You don't want that. So leave a review. Leave a 5-star review if you agree with that. 4 is fine too, I guess. And I'll read your feedback for a limited time only. We'll cut it off at, in honor of this today's subject, Donnie Darko. We'll cut it off on Halloween, on Samhain, October 31st, 2021. And then I'm not reading them ever again. Never again. It'll never happen again. Never, 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 never. Okay. Now, based on the negative feedback, you don't like the beginning with the housekeeping. But you know what? Like, this is the time that I get to catch up with you before we get into the hardcore stuff. And I like to catch up. But you know what? If you don't want it, I won't do it. What are we going to talk about today? Besides begging for you to leave some reviews that I can make this a better show for you. We're going to talk about Donnie Darko. Long overdue. Long overdue. You've seen this movie. You love this movie. So do I. But I gotta tell you, it's Illuminate confirmed. It's got all the themes, the messaging that you would come to expect from Hollywood. And it's really gonna blow your mind. It blew my mind. This is gonna be a two-parter because I've got way too much to talk about for it to be one show and one show only. I like my shows an hour. I like my books 200 pages. I like my movies 90 minutes. This one's longer than 90 minutes, but that's fine. It was still good. But yeah, the whole film, as you listen to the next two episodes, you will hear about the Gnostic spirituality buried in the film. The Great Reset. It's all here, folks. It's all here. Now, we're not in the plot spoiler territory yet. I will warn you that's coming in about 5 minutes. So if you haven't seen Donnie Darko, featuring Jake Gyllenhaal from 2001, you got to go see it. It's actually really good. I mean, I don't know what kind of movies you like. For me, it was really good. I loved it. Definitely top, I don't know, 30 films, top 20 films, maybe. It's up there. So should you watch it? Yes, absolutely. It's kind of like if you watched Netflix's Dark series, imagine watching Netflix's Dark series, but you could kind of understand what's happening. That's what this movie's like. Imagine Netflix's Dark series where you can kind of understand it and it doesn't consume 30 hours of your life. That's what this is. It's perfect. It's perfect. It's a great film. If you've got ADD, you're going to love it because the scenes are like 1 minute long. It's like a SoundCloud rap album. 2 minute scenes. Boom, 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 boom. There's not enough time to breathe between scenes. You're just like, what is happening? But it's not like high intensity either. Like, it's not an action film. I watched it, and here's the background. I watched this movie, I would say, no less than three times in the early 2000s. I saw it when it came out. I believe I saw it on DVD rental or maybe even VHS. Was it DVD? Yeah, it must have been DVDs by then. 2002, 2003. Anyway, I saw it then. It blew my mind the first time I saw it. I had no clue. I was a young man, 22-ish. And I was like, whoa, what was that? That was a trip, man. And I was always into those kinds of like thinking films. I just didn't know what to think about them. I just knew there was something to think about. All I remembered of it was I really enjoyed it the first time. I watched it a second time, and I'm pretty sure I watched it a third time, all in the early 2000s. And I just remember thinking, oh, this is a great film. And I didn't remember a lot outside of it. Fast forwarding to 2021, going into the memory banks at least 15 years, I said, what was that movie about? I remember it had something to do with time travel, and there were some cool music sequences. That's all I remembered. So now that I'm choking down red pills left and right, I thought, this is definitely worth a rewatch with a new perspective. When did this movie... And this is my preamble to the movie. I do this for every movie review, okay? I like to give you a nice little background, and then we'll get into the movie, and I'll walk you through the whole thing in case you don't want to see it. Or you don't remember it, maybe. When did this movie come out? Well, it was released in Sundance January 2001. Then it was released in the theaters in October 2001. Now go back in time. Do you remember? Where were you when the towers fell? In September 2001. This film was released 1 month after. Which was a very eerie time in America, as I understand it. I wasn't here. I was overseas, serving this beloved country, fighting for freedom wherever there's trouble. So I don't remember how I saw this the first time. I want to say it was 2002 or 3 when I come back to the States. But anyway, the tone was very eerie here, so it was a big dud in the theater. Because there's a big scene about this aircraft engine flying out and crashing into a house, which was definitely too close for comfort when we consider 9/11, right? Another big major event happening in America, Columbine, the Columbine shooters. In fact, the director, Richard Kelly, was interviewed in 2017. Because there's some elements that run parallel in this film to Columbine when you watch it. And we'll get there when we go through the film. Because the Columbine shooters, they were on the SSRIs just like old Donnie Darko was. They're pulling out the strap just like Donnie Darko did. They go to high school just like Donnie Darko. And they asked Richard Kelly, and Kelly said, quote, Columbine was something that affected me deeply and disturbed me on a very deep level when it happened. It also cast a shadow over the film when it premiered at Sundance Film Festival in 2001, about 8 or 9 months prior to 9/11. At that point, Columbine was still very much in the conversation. I remember distributors backing away from the movie immediately. It was a really sensitive time, and people were just not comfortable distributing a film involving a teenager firing a gun. But we've come a long way since then. We still got our guns in the movies, right? But yeah, that was a lot of stuff happening around this time, so it was doomed for failure, unfortunately. And then on top of that, like, come on. Is the American audience as mature and intelligent as us? No. Not the mouth breathers. They weren't ready for this. They're not as smart as you and I. They're not as, their woke levels aren't up. they're like, wait a bit. When's Donnie going to put a cape on and fly away? I got to stop talking trash about superhero movies because I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to do the Salt Lake City Fan X. I'm going to do a lecture and sell some books. So be there Friday and Saturday, September 17th and 18th. Provided the world's still intact and we're still doing it. Okay, the movie. Anyways, yeah, I'm going to be doing a whole lecture and I'm going to talk about superheroes briefly in it. And the people are surely going to hate me. The nerds will hate me. Surrounded by nerds. Very dangerous territory for me. Pray for me. How long is this movie? It's damn near 2 hours. Violating one of the commandments for a great movie. But that's okay. They actually make it move pretty quick. So they do a good job with that. And it's ironic. Don't worry. The irony isn't lost on me that I want movies to be 90 minutes when Stanley Kubrick made the best movies of all time. And they're the driest, longest movies ever created. I get it. Am I a hypocrite? Yes. So there you go. And then who's in it? Holy crap. So many people in this movie. So many big names in this one. You'll hear all about this. There's these big names playing minor roles, and we'll get into each actor as we go through the movie. There's too many to rattle off here. The main star of the movie is Jake Gyllenhaal. You know him, the guy who said he doesn't shower, which we talk about on Breaking Social Norms. There's a whole episode on bathing. We recorded me and Josie Wiseup talking about celebrities and their odd bathing habits and how that's part of the Great Reset too. It's all part of the Great Reset. And Jake Gyllenhaal is right there with him. My favorite Gyllenhaal movie is probably Jarhead. That was pretty good. Fun fact, Vince Vaughn was actually supposed to be Donnie Darko, but he felt like he was too old to play that character. Vince Vaughn was in probably the greatest comedy of all time, Wedding Crashers. Then, who else is in it? Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jake's sister, who was in Secretary, a film about BDSM, if you haven't seen it. Also, a good movie. Also, Sherry Baby, if you haven't seen Sherry Baby, which there used to be. Should I go into personal? No, I'll just move on. So me and Josie watched Sherry Baby forever ago, and in the movie, there was, I recall there being a lovemaking scene. I thought it was like on a washer or something. And I thought there was something she was saying during that scene that I kept repeating to Josie for years, annoying her in a loving, fun way. Because I always go, Sherry Baby, at the same time. And I Googled the term Sherry Baby sex scene. Because I was like, okay, what was that? Maybe I can just find the clip of it or something. And let me tell you, don't do that. I'm going to tell you right now, don't do that. I repeat a third time, do not type that in your Google search engine, because what popped up was like this warning about, you know, about child stuff, right? I was like, whoa, what the hell? And I realized, like, I typed in the terms, you know, was the Sherry Baby and then the thing. And I was like, oh dear, here we go. So do not do that. So I don't know what the scene was or what I said. But yeah, I'm going to give you that fair warning. Don't do that. That'd be a bad thing. Don't do that. But everything seemed fine. I don't know. I just closed it out. I was like, oh boy. It just was like, it gave me a warning. It said something like, you know, if you find this type of stuff on news links, you must report it and stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I'm not trying to find that kind of stuff. But hey, you know, Google, right? Should have duck-duck-goed it. Okay, now these two actors, Jake and Maggie, they were born to directors, Stephen Gyllenhaal and Naomi Foner, which I'm sure had zero bearing on them actually getting jobs in Hollywood as actors. I'm sure they worked very hard. to get through. I mean, they're good actors. Who am I kidding? But it really begs the question, because like a lot of times you hear about these singers and actors, and then you look into their past and you're like, oh, well, they came from money, born with a silver spoon. Their parents were in Hollywood. Of course they were plugged in immediately. Of course they were. But yeah, they want to dangle that fantasy of, oh yeah, someday that'll be you. Just work hard like these people did. No, no, no. It's not the American dream. It's the American scheme to make you think you're one of them. And like George Carlin said, it's a big club and you ain't in it. But hey, I also will in the same breath tell you to use the power of positive thinking, okay? Don't let that get you down. Pursue your passion. But you don't need to be a big celebrity like Jake Gyllenhaal. You don't need that level of fame. You don't want that level of fame. Maybe you're happy just doing local theater, and maybe you can make a living off of that instead of having to punch the clock on a 9-to-5. Maybe that's, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Anyway. Okay, what's this movie about? Good Lord. Okay, now I see why you guys bitch at me in the reviews. It's 15 minutes in. I'm just now telling you what this movie's about. Maybe I deserve it. Maybe I deserve it. Plot. I don't know that you could encapsulate the plot into like a quick sentence or two. So I'm going to read you what IMDb posted, because they managed to try. And they say, after narrowly escaping a bizarre accident, a troubled teenager is plagued by visions of a man in a large rabbit suit who manipulates him to commit a series of crimes. Okay. All right, maybe. I think it's about Aleister Crowley and the new spirituality, but hey, what do I know? Something else you'll notice when I did this film. So I do a lot of these film analysis. Whether you like them or not, I don't know. I'll be eagerly waiting to read your feedback and reviews and ratings. Because a lot, I've already read some nasty ones. They're like, Isaac, quit talking about film. There's so much going on in the world. Yeah, cool. Like, I avoid those geopolitics things. And, like, politics is just wrestling theater. And I don't want to play into that. I could fall into that, but there's a million other quote-unquote truthers you could listen to that can rile you up and get you all fired up and pissed off. Every now and then I dabble in that realm, but I try to avoid it sometimes. It's not something I want to go to every day, okay? And I appreciate that. I know I talk shitty, but I appreciate the feedback. Because you wouldn't leave that feedback if you didn't like the show, so thank you. But I do take it in stride, but right now is a very dicey time, and I'm just trying to stay away from getting canceled. Period, right? Now, so when I do these film analysis, I sort of make notes about what's going on in the storyline so I can convey that to you so you don't have to rewatch the movie, or if you've never seen it, you can follow along. And I noticed with this one, there's so many scenes. I had to take so many notes. This plot moves along incrementally. It's death by a thousand cuts. It's actually a very complex film. And on top of that, there's a ton of theories as to what's going on in this film. I did not read a single one of them on purpose because I wanted to capture my ideas, because all I remembered was this movie was kind of weird. It was about time travel, and there's probably some symbolism buried in here somewhere. And sure enough, there was. I wanted to capture my ideas, but if you listen to these two shows and you want more, you can go to Reddit. There's a whole Reddit on it. I actually read them just now after I'd already taking my notes, just to see what they were saying. No one's talking about Crowley or The Great Reset, by the way, for what it's worth. So maybe I'm way off base. Maybe I'm way off. Okay, now, the movie. As always, plot spoilers coming your way. So if you haven't seen this movie, it's now your fault if I ruin it for you. You've been warned. It's a good movie. You should go watch it. Let's go. Oh, and also, there's a ton of images I captured off of this thing. If I forget to tell you, you got to follow me on the Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt, because as you know, they're after me left, right, and everywhere. I've already had to shut down every blog article I wrote for the last 10 years because I got sued. You know what I'm saying? So right now, Instagram is where I post the images. So add it, at Isaac Weishaupt, like and subscribe, link in the show notes as always. Okay. Let's start it out. Donnie wakes up. He's on top of, like, I don't know, the Hollywood Hills or whatever. That's what all these scenes look the same when in these movies. It looks like the Hollywood Hills is what I call them. And he's, you know, he's unconscious and he gets up. He's like, whoa, what the hell? It's early morning. He just gets on his bicycle and rides home. And you're like, okay, that was bizarre. Then we notice we're coming up on All Hallows Eve. Very purposefully placed around this holiday. And we'll get into why. You hear a song, The Killing Moon Play, very, very ominous tone being set, very cool, right? But yeah, there's a ritualistic idea with this whole movie popping up on Halloween, All Hallows Eve. Samhain, as the witches call it. So Donnie gets home, he's riding his bike home. It's very normal because I guess he's a sleepwalker or whatever and the family's just used to it. They don't really, I don't know, care. Mom, she's in the front lawn reading Stephen King's It. And we find out her name is Rose Darko, which is curious because that fits into the Aleister Crowley argument. I'm going to be asking you to stuff a lot in your back pocket, okay? Stuff that in your back pocket. Rose. And then the family's all sitting around the table. His sister, Elizabeth, played by Sherry Baby, she says she's voting for Dukakis. Because it's 1988. And we find out Dad frowns upon this. They live in this very, it looks like upper class suburban white neighborhood is what it looks like to me. Maybe it's like middle upper class. Like it's not a mansion, but it's definitely nicer than anyone's house I knew growing up. But Elizabeth says she's voting for Dukakis and Dad hates it because Dad hates the federal government. He's your traditional conservative kind of fella. Donnie's at the table, but he's the dark artist type and he's going to therapy and he hates his parents for making him take medication, hence the reason he was passed out on the bike at the beginning of the movie. And he speaks very candidly throughout the movie. He has no filter whatsoever. He calls Elizabeth a fuck ass at the dinner table, no less. Oh my god. It's actually pretty funny. Pretty funny exchange. I would assume a pretty normal sort of family sitting around the table. And then Donnie is up in his room. And we see a poster on his wall. And what's on that poster? You guessed it. The all-seeing eye. Telling us we're witnessing the revelation of the method. The slow incremental process of awakening mankind to the nature of reality. And what is that nature of reality? Well, it's the one that the Illuminati choose to set up for us. The Gnostic realm of inversion, which we'll get to in the conclusion at part two. So Donnie's got the poster with the all-seeing eye. He goes to the medicine cabinet, and there's a medication, and all you can see is the, it says, it's a bunch of letters that you can't see, but it says EPIN. 25 milligrams. And I'm not a pill popper kind of guy. I don't know what the Klonopin. I have no idea. What's a mental illness drug that ends in EPIN? I imagine there's several. Maybe on purpose the director doesn't show this to us. But it shows him taking the medication. And then the next thing you know, Donnie gets summoned by a voice at midnight, and we confirm it is now October 2nd, 1988.
Wake up. I've been watching you. Closer.
Now, that disembodied voice is Frank, the bunny rabbit that you already know is in this film. Now, again, in that same back pocket where I told you Donnie's mother is named Rose, also know that Crowley had a disembodied voice named AWOS that spoke to him. Okay? Same pocket. Now, Frank, the bunny, he tells Donnie, you know, there's 28 days and that's when the world will end. And we know from the date that it was shown on the screen that lines up with October 30th. Now, this functions as one of the only predictable stabilizers of this film, which lets the audience know there's some kind of structure, some kind of timeline here to keep us engaged, because it seems like it's just pure chaos. And you're like, none of this makes any sense. But there's a timeline and they're moving us along. And you know, by the end of the film, we're going to get to October 30th, which is obviously coinciding with Halloween, Samhain, October 31st. You know the drill. So we see the dream sequence of something horrific happening at the house. This is foreshadowing. We don't know if it's a dream or what's going on. Next thing you know, Donnie wakes up on a golf course, just like he woke up from his bicycle ride on the Hollywood Hills. Now he's on a golf course. And we're introduced to two characters, Dr. Fisher and Jim Cunningham. Now, Jim Cunningham is played by Patrick Swayze. All right. And they just kind of wake him up. And again, the adults in this town are crazy. I don't know. They just kind of wake him up like, go on, get back home. Does no one care about Donnie? What's going on here? Anyway, Donnie walks home. And it turns out that horrific dream he had was actually a real thing. He gets up to the house. There's police tape all around the house. And you see them using a crane to pull a jet engine out of Donnie's room, because a jet engine fell inside of Donnie's room that night while Donnie was presumably just sleeping on the golf course or whatever. And Donnie walks up and the parents, who we would expect to be distraught, thinking, oh my God, where's Donnie? He must have been crushed under this jet engine because it went in his bedroom. He walks up and they're just kind of like, oh, hey, Donnie, there he is. No one cares about Donnie. Poor Donnie. Now, again, to go back in time to 2001, this was immediately after 9/11, which shook everyone to the foundation. Everybody was uncomfortable AF. Nobody wanted to get on a plane. No one wanted to see plane tragedies. You couldn't show this kind of thing back then, a month into this thing, because people were too skeeved out by the whole deal. So in the movie, the FAA shows up. They make the parents sign some papers. Ironically, Dad, who previously talked about how much he hates the government, is more than happy to play along, because they set him up in a hotel. And Elizabeth, Sherry Baby, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal, she tells Donnie they don't know where the jet engine came from. They don't know. Unsolved mystery. Now, do you remember the other unsolved mystery? I know things have been crazy the last 2 years. We're all worried about the thing that will never go away. But if you recall, just a few years back, there was a whole jet airliner that disappeared called MH370. They still don't know what happened. They claim they found pieces here and there, and they just assume it crashed into the ocean or whatever. The ocean's pretty big in their defense. But there were lots of crazy theories about what happened. Did this thing go through a wormhole? Did it get zapped up by aliens? They really don't know. They do not know. And then fast forward to just a few years, and the reports about the UFOs are coming out, and they're saying, well, this could be a national threat of some kind. This could be dangerous to have UFOs flying around in the skies where airplanes are flying around. And could it be MH370 smashed into a UFO? I find it curious that no one's bringing that up. in all this talk about how we need to investigate what these UFOs are, excuse me, UAPs, they're repropagandizing this. So very odd that they were about 15 years ahead of their time with this mystery plane that wasn't ever there and the jet engine falling out of the sky, just like MH370. But they zoom into the engine, the camera does at least, right? And you see the spiral, which looks just like the Eye of Horus on some levels. So there we have it again. The spiral, of course, symbolizes the evolution of man, which is what I'm overall arguing this movie is about. Evolving man. Awakening man's third eye, the Eye of Horus, to the new spirituality of Gnosticism. So mom, she drops the kids off at the bus stop and tells the youngest daughter, Samantha, that Mrs. Fisher will bring her home from practice. So they're all very close. And to re-encapsulate this, the Darko family, Dr. Fisher and Mrs. Fisher, Jim Cunningham, a.k.a. Patrick Swayze, all very close. And you got to put this in your other back pocket, because that will be important here in a bit. So the kids, they get to school, cue the Tears for Fears music. And there were lyrics of interest here, talking about how time flies. Isn't it funny how time flies? And this has a great soundtrack, by the way. If you like 80s music, this movie might be right for you. But they do this cool sequence of like slow motion, like the time, the speeds of the film are just all over the place to add to the chaos. But this is like one of the bits I did remember, is this crazy sequence with the music, and they got these preppies doing lines of coke in the lockers. Out of nowhere, Seth Rogen shows up. Oh my God, Seth Rogen. I'm not making that up. Then we're introduced to Drew Barrymore. She's up in this piece too. She's the English teacher named Karen. She's a Karen. Crazy high school. Then, so the class, so Drew Barrymore's class, because she's an English teacher, they're discussing a novel by Graham Greene, and I'm an uncultured degenerate. I don't know who that is. Didn't know who that was. And she calls on Donnie to interpret this story. And listen to what he says. He says something extremely curious.
What is Graham Greene trying to communicate with this passage? Why did the children break into old Misery's house? Joni?
They wanted to rob him.
Joni, if you had actually read the short story, which at a whopping 13 pages would have kept you up all night, you would know that the children find a great deal of money in the mattress, but they burn it. Donnie Darko, perhaps with your recent brush with mass destruction, you can give us your opinion.
Well, they say it right when they flood the house and they tear it to shreds that, like, destruction is a form of creation, so the fact that they burn the money is ironic. They just want to see what happens when they tear the world apart. They want to change things.
Did you catch that? He said destruction is a form of creation. Very Nietzsche, which makes sense because he's a very angsty young man. But more importantly, this was right after 9/11. I mean, obviously it was filmed before 9/11 if you look at the timeline of this thing. But what exactly happened on 9/11? It was the alchemical transmutation, whether it was staged or not, whether it was an inside job or not, I certainly do not know. We'll never know. But I do know that we were all transformed as a society, as a people. They facilitated the ritual by repeatedly telling you, from the same script, things will never be the same again. Which sounds very similar to what happened 20 years after with the thing that will never go away when they said, oh, things will never be the same again. This is the new normal, time for the Great Reset. And again, we'll revisit this in the conclusion, but this is all alchemy at its finest. So the new So the new female student shows up in the classroom where Karen, Drew Karenmore. This scene's crazy. She says, she walks in and she's like, where do I sit? And Drew Karenmore, she's like, sit next to the boy you think is the cutest, which is a great response. If I was ever a teacher, I'd like to be as cool as Drew Karenmore. And but she's for real. And she lets her pick her seat. Like, we're all watching. Like, well, who does she think's the cutest? She looks around. She thinks it's Donnie. But there's a girl sitting next to Donnie. And Drew Karenmore tells the girl sitting next to Donnie, get up. What? She makes her get up so that the new girl can sit next to Donnie because she thinks Donnie's the cutest. Which, this whole sequence gives more credence to one of the crazy theories, like the Reddit theories about this movie, that the whole thing is just a dream, which is every single movie, that's the go-to, the whole thing's a dream. We call it the Super Mario Brothers 2 effect. That's what I call it. Let's see if we can get that going. But just a dream. The whole thing's a dream. But yeah, that's bizarre. Completely abnormal. So Donnie's going, driving home with Dad. And we're introduced to an old lady named Roberta Sparrow, a.k.a. Grandma Death. And all Grandma Death does is she walks back and forth to the mailbox all day long. Which is ironic because that's what I did in 2020. I don't know about you. When I was brutally locked down for days and days. Checking the mail was a big event. Very exciting. Couldn't wait to go to the mailbox. Wash my hands 1,000 times afterwards. Oh my God, what the thing is on the letter. Anyway, so Grandma Death's going back and forth to the mailbox all day long because she's kind of senile. And she's checking for something that will never come. She's deliriously stumbling around in her front yard and in the street. Donnie and Dad are driving up and Donnie's like, oh my God, look out, Dad. Sure. Slam the brakes. Donnie gets out to check on her. And she whispers something into his ear. And we'll find out later. Very Eyes Wide Shut-esque, dare I say. When Tom Cruise's character, Bill Harford, Dr. Bill Harford. Excuse me, he didn't go to medical school for me to call him Mr. Dr. Bill Harford is in the Rainbow Costumes, Rainbow Fashions store. With Malik and Malik's underage daughter, who's getting it on with some old business dudes, whispers something into his ear. Seductively, dare I say. Anyway, we'll get into what that whispering is because we find out later in the movie, okay? I apologize for all the teasing. That's how the movie goes, okay? Got tease game on fleek today. But that's how the movie's going, so that's how I'm revealing it to you. Now, Donnie, like I said earlier, he goes to a therapist. Great, great idea, Donnie. I support therapy myself. He says that Frank, this bunny, this imaginary friend of his, wants him to follow him into the future. And oh, by the way, the world's coming to an end.
I met a new friend.
Real or imaginary?
Imaginary.
Would you like to talk about this friend?
Frank.
Frank. What did Frank say?
He said to follow him.
Follow him? Where?
Into the future.
And then what happens?
And then he said... that the world is coming to an end.
Do you think the world is coming to an end?
No. That's stupid.
So now we know it's the apocalypse, which, as we talked about in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, User Illusion 1, the apocalypse, I think we talked about it there, the apocalypse merely means, like, the revelation, the beginning of the new age. Right? It's the disclosure, the great revelation of knowledge. disclosing something that was previously hidden. It's the revelation of the method. So, as part of my conclusion of what this movie's all about, he says it right there. Point blank. The world's coming to an end, and he's there to facilitate it with Frank, the disembodied entity. So these kids, they're all in school, and they're watching this like motivational video on VHS. And there's this crazy talk about destroying the ego, right? We've heard that before somewhere. In order to find that path to happiness and conquering fears. And who's talking about all this guru stuff? Well, none other than Jim Cunningham. Old Patrick Swayze himself. Because this whole movie has this sort of theme of the town is under the spell of this guru, Patrick Swayze. And it's like kind of this weird Christian cult, but without ever mentioning Jesus Christ. It's very bizarre. And there's a reason for all that. We'll find out later. Donnie, he has a dream where Frank shows him how to use this axe to break this pipe. And I thought it was some kind of allegory for a wet dream. I don't know. But they show him digging an axe and breaking this pipe and gushing water out everywhere. And we're given this screen prompt that says October 6th, 1988, 24 days remain. Again, confirming we're moving along the timeline closer to October 30th when the end of the world happens. Okay? Now, Samantha, she's, again, like Donnie's younger sister. She says some really bizarre things. It's a very short statement, but I think it's very relevant.
And the prince was led to a world of strange and beautiful magic.
She's reading her own story she wrote about the unicorn. And she says, the prince is led into a world full of strange and beautiful magic. Which to me, I read that as a reference to Donnie Darko as the prince. He's the prince who's being led into a world full of strange and beautiful magic by Frank, by the disembodied entity. He's the modern day magician. He will create the new reality. He will bring about the apocalypse. He's the harbinger of death. Death not meaning he's going to kill everyone. Death meaning the death of the old way. He's ushering the new normal, the great reset. The thing that will never be the same again. So we find out that dream wasn't a dream at all. He manifests. So like you see how the magic connects here. He has these dreams and these visions and these thoughts, and they manifest into reality. Is he thinking these, or is he really doing it? Is he in a drugged out state and doing it and not realizing it? We don't know. But we find out either way, the school is flooded, meaning Frank, the bunny, in fact, got Donnie to break the water pipe. And then Donnie magically planted the axe inside of a bronze statue, adding to the supernatural elements here. And then meanwhile, the frat boys in the school doing coke and Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen tells the new girl, I like your boobs. And then Donnie comes to save her from this creepy gang of bros. And that's how Donnie hooks up with new girl. That's now his girlfriend. Boom. Because he defended her from Seth Rogen being creepy. So the new girl, whose name is Gretchen, has a lot of characters in this movie. That's why I don't want to go through. I try to keep it simple for you here. Donnie and Gretchen. And oh, by the way, Gretchen, in case you weren't sold that this is an all-star cast yet, played by Jenna Malone from Hunger Games. So Donnie and Gretchen, they get along just fine because they both have emotional baggage because Gretchen's dad killed Gretchen's mom. They both suffer from, they have a little trauma bonding going on there, right? So Donnie's in the therapist's office. She puts him under hypnosis. And he starts talking about making sexy time. And he starts to pull out his unit there for hand party time. And she cuts it off. What role does that play in the movie? I don't know. Again, like I said, there's a million rapid fire scenes and you're just trying to piece it all together. Then there's some talk about Graham Greene, the Drew Caranmore there. She was having the class read Graham Greene's book, The Destructors. And the book is apparently, I never read it. I don't never even heard of the guy. But I'm damn near illiterate, so. The book is about kids destroying an elderly man's home. And during a PTA meeting, Mrs. Farmer, that's Dr. Farmer's wife, asserts that this must have been the motivation behind the flooding of the school. That must have been in that book that Drew Caranmore made the kids read, must have influenced a student to flood the school. It was the old fiction influences reality argument, which ironically they had previously lobbed at Marilyn Manson for Columbine. Which in some levels I don't disagree with, but I'm not for censorship, so what do you do with that? I don't know. You try to educate people to be well-rounded human beings is what you try to do. Because look, I consume an abnormal amount of hip-hop being a white, middle-class, suburban guy. An abnormal amount. But I've never once thought, you know what I should do? Sell drugs and get a gun. Because my circle of influence doesn't include people that do that. But there's some people that circle of influence in their personal life, they know people that do that. And this music influences them, unfortunately, to choose that lifestyle. And I don't know what you do with it. Do you ban hip-hop music? No, you try to teach and educate people that are in that position that might be influenced in the wrong way to pursue that lifestyle. You got to have voices of reason say, look, there's another way. You don't need to do that. That's a bad way of doing it. And I don't know the answer of how you do that. I just know that censorship is not the answer. Now, Donnie, he's sleeping. And you know when he's going to night-night, it's bad news bears. Because here comes Frank the Demon Bunny. But Frank and the Demon Bunny, they're looking at each other in a mirror now. And Donnie touches the mirror and it ripples. And where did you see that? Around the same exact time period? Well, you saw that in The Matrix. Because the mirror is a trope for the gateway to another dimension. Because again, that's what this movie's about, is creating a new reality. And it could be as simple as slipping into another dimension. That could be why all that Mandela effect might work in reality. And again, you got to see the images. I'll have them on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. Look in the show notes as always. But the Matrix, ironically, is also another conspiracy theory about this movie. Donnie is actually Neo. That's a crazy conspiracy, but hey, I like it. I don't know if it fits exactly, but there's claims that they're using the same dialogue in the movie. I don't know. I'd have to rewatch it again. Ain't nobody got time for that, though. In terms of the mirror subject, if you look at the occult spirituality, such as Kabbalah, right? In Kabbalah, you've got that tree of life with the 10 sephirot, which are the emanations of God, him or herself. And the emanations each embody a different principle, okay, of these sephirot. And there's one called Bina. This is the principle of understanding, and that is considered the palace of mirrors, which is why Alice is always looking into the mirror in Alice in Wonderland, wondering what's on the other side, through the looking glass, just like Alice Harford from Eyes Wide Shut, who also looks in the mirror. What you saw in the movie posters and in the film when Tom Cruise makes the best love to her. Tom Cruise, why did she cheat on you? I would have never done that if I was her. Oh, Eyes Wide Shut. I need to do another Eyes Wide Shut movie analysis. So this whole scene, Donnie is talking to Frank. Frank's on the other side of the mirror. And Frank asked Donnie if he believes in time travel, setting us up for part two of this film analysis, where we're going to get into some of this time travel talk. It's just another part of the puzzle. And here's why you should listen to part two. We're going to talk about the Gnostic reality, We're going to talk more about the Aleister Crowley connections. We're going to talk about how Frank is channeling the information, the gnosis, the knowledge, into Donnie. And they get into this whole philosophy of time travel book through Grandma Death. And Donnie makes some pretty chilling statements in the idea of the search for God and how absurd it is. And we're gonna do more fun facts. There's fun facts throughout the whole film. And there's some pretty clear connections to the idea of the spirituality behind this movie. And we get into some very strange connections with the real world, the Illuminati of such, Frank the Bunny, how the whole world goes inverted. Because that's what it's all about. That's what the new normal is all about. That's what the Great Reset is all about. And this film, it just shows several scenes to keep the audience evaluating and ruminating on these ideas. And here I am talking to you about them. Exactly what they want, I could argue. We're going to talk a little bit about 9/11, some more, some Crowley stuff, Gnosticism. Yeah, you know, the whole deal. Halloween, of course. We'll talk about Halloween. Not the movie, the holiday, the sacrifice holiday. But yeah, come back for part two. I'll drop it within the week here. So stay subscribed to the show. And like I said at the beginning, please drop your feedback, reviews, and ratings. I would appreciate it if you could drop a 5-star to help a brother out. I am going to read them, and I'll give you till Halloween. Yeah. So there you go. That's all I got. Okay. I appreciate you listening. Till next time, stay woke.